Well, if you're worried about what to cook tonight or tomorrow night, now's the time to listen to this programme because it's At the Table with Gail. At the Table with Gail Hall, I'm Peter Fleming, and Gail's going to come up with some recipes for you.
Right. Thank you, Peter. But before we do this, before we get into action, as we say, let's just do a recap on a couple of things that both you and I have both done over this last week or so. So I actually made the vegan lentil pie, I think it was called, and Peter made the smoked fish
pot pies.
And he sent me a photo of his, and I sent him a photo of mine. So there we are, we shared. But we both had comments this morning about, you know, exactly what we felt about the recipe. So I'm going to go first, and I'll hand you over to Peter once he wants to tell you about his smoked fish pies. But I did make this, and it's actually really, really nice. So it's nothing to do with the actual baking of it. The size of the container is quite important, I think, when you're doing recipes like this. So I had put it into a sort of ceramic container, which was sort of large because it made quite a bit. But in retrospect, I think it was 1.5 kilos of potatoes that we measured out to put on the top. Well, I felt in the end, once it was baked, there was quite a bit of potato and the filling was okay, but maybe it would have been better in a smaller container, squatter container, because you would have got a lovely lot of filling and maybe less potato on top. Because even though it is lovely, I think it's nice to have most of it, the beautiful vegan pie, which was lovely, but the potato on top, if it was thinner, you'd get more benefit from the actual, well, I suppose I'm going to say the guts of the recipe, really, which was lovely. So just a little hint, the whole pie was lovely, and I have brought a sample in, so we'll have to hear about that next time. But anyway, that's my little recap from a recent recipe. I'll leave it to you, Peter.
Well, you can see there's a bit of a competition going on. when we did the programme last week, I was a bit intrigued by the smoked fish pot pies because it was a recipe where you made a normal sort of roux by you've sautéed the onions, put extra butter in, then you put some flour, put the flour in, stirred it up, it thickened, then you start putting milk and there was milk and vegetable stock, I think it was, in. And I introduced Gail to a different way of doing a white sauce or a sauce like that, is you just put the cold things in a pan. So rather than make it that way, what I did, I sautéed the onions in one pan, and in another one, cold, I put the flour, the lump of butter, and the milk. The vegetable stock, all cold.
And the vegetable stock, all cold. Right. You were going to experiment with that, weren't you, Peter?
Yes. Yeah. And so I did, and I stirred it as it constantly stirring as you warm it up, and sure enough, it went into a nice, smooth, lumpless sauce sort of thing.
That's what we wanted to know.
Then I tipped it. Yes, that was the essence of it, really. Then I tipped that into the other pan where I'd got the onions, added all the other ingredients, and the only difference then was that we couldn't find any suitable smoked fish. So instead of 200 white and 200 smoked grams of fish, we used 200 grams of a white fish, which I think was trevally, and we bought a piece of smoked salmon, hot smoked salmon, which was about 125 grams. Mm. Put all that in together. Don't forget the teaspoonful of mustard. I use Dijon mustard, which I think is the essence of the whole thing.
Right.
Stirred all that in, put it into little pots, put some circles of ready-made puff pastry on the top, and bake them only for 30 minutes, not 40, as it said, and honestly, delicious, really good, very simple, and very, very tasty. And I say, I think a lot comes down to that teaspoonful of mustard.
Oh, so in the recipe, it didn't specify a mustard, did it?
No,
just
it didn't.
A teaspoon of mustard.
No, and I thought English mustard might be a bit much.
No, well, that sounds lovely. And we have posted some photographs, and let's hope that they do get onto the Facebook page or onto the site, and you can have a look. But Very decorative with those green beans next door to it, Peter. Very colourful.
Well, a friend
You'll be
gave...
getting a job as a photographic photographer.
Friend gave me some green beans and I loved them. My wife hates them, but I think they're nice. It did set the pie off, didn't it?
It certainly did. It was really pretty. So that's just, we like to do this because, if we're trying out things, Peter, we like to put our own little touch on it, and that's good for the listeners to know.
And we come up with a few hints, all being well, to perhaps
exactly.
help you along.
Mm, exactly. But what we're going to start off with this week is a gluten-free plum and ginger flan. Now, plums are just dripping off people's trees. In fact, I brought some in this morning, just a few out there in a bowl, and dripping off, trees. So I just thought, well, why? We should be having some plum recipes. So this is what I've got for you at the moment. 125 grams of butter or margarine, because if it's going to be, it's not dairy-free, but, you can choose. Half a cup of brown sugar, one egg, one cup of almond flour, 3/4 cup of corn flour, 2 teaspoons of ginger, ground ginger that is, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1.5 cups of halved, cooked and drained Black Doris plums. Now they're beautiful Black Doris at the moment. I've actually got a bowl of them in my fridge just stewed for me to have with yogurt, but not necessary, but Black Doris, if you can get them, any plums will do. 1/4 cup of crystallized ginger, roughly chopped, and 1 tablespoon of coffee crystals. And if you haven't got those, I always think the raw sugar, will probably suffice. But of course, the coffee crystals have got the coffee taste.
Oh, that's coffee sugar. Mm.
Yeah, crystals. Coffee sugar. Yeah, right. Coffee sugar. And anyway, and of course, to serve, we have cream, my favourite, and icing sugar. But what we're doing is preheating the oven to 180 degrees Celsius. Now, I haven't given you the pastry recipe because you've all got your own idea of putting, pastry in a flan. So just make sure that you've got a 24 centimetre roughly flan and line it with your pastry. In a large pot, melt the butter. Then stir in this order, and this seems to be quite important, sugar, egg, almond flour, corn flour, ginger, and baking powder. So in that order. Stir well to combine. Tip half of the batter into the prepared dish and place the plums, over that batter. Then it says crumble the remaining batter. Well, I'm not sure how crumbly that will be. But if you do want it, if it seems to be a bit wet, just add a little bit more corn flour to it. And it's probably not what I've given to you, Peter, but that's if it's sort of, I sort of felt if it's a batter, it's not really crumbly. It says crumble over the rest, but I haven't made this, so I could be completely wrong. But anyway, you're putting the rest of the mixture over the plums in the pan. Then top with the crystallized ginger and the coffee crystals. And you're sort of making sure that you put that crystallized ginger, press it in. Bake for 30 to 40 minutes or until it smells yummy and a skewer comes out clean. Now, allow to cool slightly, then dust with icing sugar and served with whipped cream. Sounds beautiful. One way to use the plums.
Well, that sounds pretty good, Gail. I've got a little bit of a query over quite how it's made. How about you taking on for your task, your mission next week, should you choose to accept it? Have a go at this one and see what happens. Because
exactly.
I don't see how you're going to crumble
Basic.
A batter. It says crumble over the remaining batter.
Exactly. Exactly. I thought that was very odd. Yeah.
So what I'm saying to listeners is...
want morning tea, listeners.
I'd say hold on until next week and we get a report from Gail on how
right.
she got on with this one.
Okay, right. Challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
Accepted.
Yes.
Now, Peter, I'm going to move on to this one. It was just a little quick one, and it actually goes with a salad, but I didn't want to give you the salad because I just sort of think, well, you could put this over. In fact, traditionally used on grilled meats, but anyway, the recipe was underneath the salad, and it just, I just like the name. Chimichurri sauce. Yeah, chimichurri. Yeah, and I looked it up. because I was curious and I've got to know these things because I've got to pass this information on. It actually originates from Argentina and it's very, very similar to a pesto. So it's basically traditionally, as I said, used on grilled meats. But I thought, well, it's been used on a salad. You could use it on grilled meats if you're doing it. But I just thought, I'm going to try this. And if you do make this and you are going to serve it, please take it out of the fridge at least 20 minutes before serving because it's similar to a pesto, so you don't want it solid. It'll just let it at room temperature. So we've got half a cup of finely chopped parsley, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh oregano, or if you haven't got it fresh, 2 teaspoons of dried, 3 cloves of garlic crushed or finely grated. I think I'd have trouble grating a clove of garlic. I suppose you could on the fine grater.
I take it out of a jar as I always do.
Okay.
I'm a bit of a cheat.
Yeah, well, that's all right. It's not, as long as it tastes the same. But finely grated garlic, that might be a little bit hard. So I'd be tend to be crushing it. I have got a garlic crusher. 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar. 1/2 teaspoon of chili flakes. Now that's optional, so it depends on your taste. And then 90 mils of virgin olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, and salt and pepper to season. So basically, all you're doing is this is easy. This is why I'm giving it out. Simply put all those ingredients together and season to taste. And you could probably keep that in a lidded jar. And just, you know, sort of use it. And because it's got oil in it, this will last as a dressing in the fridge for quite some time. And that's all you're doing. So how easy is that?
That's pretty easy. And you're suggesting you could also put this on
grilled meat.
Before you grill it or after?
Well, goodness me.
Why do I ask these awkward questions?
Gee whiz. Well, you know what? We could get him to make the sauce and he could try it. No, that don't worry about that, Peter. But, it could be a marinade, couldn't it? But oil in it.
Won't do any harm, will it?
No, I don't think so. It'd probably add to the flavour. You could use it as a marinade and use it as a sauce over the top.
Exactly. And as you say, you can store it in the fridge in a jar and that's handy to use at any time.
So chimichurri.
Good one.
Yes.
And with a name like that, can't resist making it really.
Exactly. Okay. So that's our just a little add in there.
Okay. Now, we've reached that section of the programme where we have a little bit of music. And because Gail has said that's her chimichurri sauce emanates from Argentina, we'll see if we can find a bit of Argentinian music for you.
Yeah, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
There we are, Gail, a bit of music with an Argentinian flavour.
Oh, good. You used to get out my castanets. Is that what I need? But here we are. We're back again, and this time we've got potato focaccia with olives and rosemary. And I've just seen a picture of Peter's focaccia bread, and wow, looks amazing. Absolutely. So I'm going to get the recipe off him later, his recipe, but this is the one I've got today. So for the bread, we've got 4 medium floury potatoes, and I think they suggest agria. Would you agree with that, Peter?
I'm not an expert on all these different sorts of potatoes, and you don't get a lot of choice here, do you?
No, well, you don't, but there are a few. But agria is definitely in the supermarket, so they're suggesting that, but floury potatoes. 2 teaspoons of active yeast, 1 cup of warm water, 4 cups of high-grade flour, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, and 2 teaspoons of salt. Now, that's your bread. So we'll give you that first. Then I'm going to give you the topping, which is now 1 cup of potato cubes, about 2 medium potatoes, 1/2 cup of mixed olives pitted and sliced in half, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 3 cloves of garlic crushed or finely grated, 1 sprig of rosemary, the leaves removed, 1/2 a teaspoon of chili flakes, and 1/2 a teaspoon of ground black pepper, and of course salt. So the method to all this is, we want to start by preparing the mashed potatoes. Start by preparing the mashed potato, peel, chop, boil, and mash enough potatoes to make 2 cups. So 2 cups of mashed potato, set aside and allow to cool until warm. Mix yeast with warm water and set aside for 5 minutes for it to dissolve and begin to activate. You'll see the change in that. In a large mixing bowl, mix mashed potato, flour, olive oil, salt and water yeast mixture until, this is funny, a shaggy dough comes together. So it's got to be a bit shaggy.
It'll be very sticky as well, I should think.
Yeah, so always I sort of think, you know, have floured hands. And tip the dough out onto a lightly floured surface and knead for 5 to 10 minutes, sprinkling with a little more flour as you need to prevent the dough becoming overly sticky, just as you said, Peter.
Mm.
The finished dough should be smooth, elastic, and just a little bit sticky. Mm. So there you are. So make sure you've got floured hands, otherwise you'll have all this dough on your fingers.
I read somewhere, put oil on your hands. And I did that this last weekend, and that seems to work very effectively.
Oh, good. Oh, okay. Well, that's a tip. Tip from Peter. But, I mean, he'd be absolutely correct there. Return the dough to an oiled bowl. Cover with a tea towel and set aside in a warm place to rise for 1 hour until the dough has about doubled in size. Right. So then knock down the dough with your fist when it's ready. Then stretch it to a large oval shape on an oiled baking tray. Use your fingers to deeply dimple the dough, then cover and set aside to rise for another hour. Little bit of time involved in this. At this time, prepare your focaccia topping by mixing everything together in a bowl and setting aside to marinate. So that potato that you did, cut up, two potatoes cut into cubes, you're putting all that mixture, the topping, into a bowl to marinate. Preheat the oven to 220 degrees Celsius. When the dough has finished proving, spread the focaccia topping evenly over the surface of the loaf and drizzle any remnants of oil in the bowl over the loaf as well. Use your fingers to push individual chunks down into the dough a bit to ensure that they do stay there, because there's nothing worse if you're taking it out the oven and all those lovely cubes of potatoes just drop off, and the mixture. So you're pressing them in so that the dough is going to encase them. Grind a little bit of extra sea salt if desired, if you need it. But the olives are salty, so just remember that. And bake for 30 minutes or until the loaf is golden brown. Now, cool for 10 to 15 minutes before slicing into beautiful thick wedges and serve.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I like focaccia bread too.
Have you made it fresh? I've never made it.
Ah, right. No. When do you make it? The voice of experience.
Yes.
It's very elastic. It's very strange stuff. So when they say spread it out, I did see it was on the Great British Bake Off the other night.
Oh.
And I usually put this on spread it out on a flat plate oven, you know.
Oh, oven tray or flat one. Yes.
It's much better to put it in something with sides, edges. You know,
so it doesn't.
You can push it out and keep it thick.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of pushing out, because you push it out and it immediately creeps back.
Bounces back.
Right. This is a fascinating recipe because of the potatoes. That's right.
Because it's got the mashed potato in it as well.
So look, let me tell you, my secret to this sort of thing is I use a bread maker.
Mm.
And all you use the bread maker for is to make the dough.
Mm.
And you just throw everything in. And it makes the dough, and then you pretty much follow the same recipe as you've got here. The topping is a bit different. You need lots of olive oil.
Right.
It's great stuff. You just slather olive oil all over focaccia when you make it. And I think the only other tip I can give you is don't forget the yeast.
Oh, okay. One of the main ingredients.
we had some friends around for lunch one day, and Peter's making focaccia bread. Oh, lovely. He's clever, isn't he? So I made this bread and I put it in the oven. And when I went to get it out, it was like a fairly deep brown biscuit.
Rock hard.
I thought, yeah, was it? Yeah, it was just this big round biscuit thing. Because I'm sure that that's the only explanation. I forgot to put the yeast in.
So when you're doing it in the bread maker, Peter, do you put the ingredients in order?
You must put the yeast in first, then the flour.
Do you use dried yeast?
Yeah, dried yeast. Okay. Just sprinkle it in the bottom of the pan.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put the flour on the top of that, and then you put in, well, in this instance, the a bit of salt and olive oil and your warm water and salt.
Mm.
And because you do it that way, then when it starts mixing, it reaches the moisture reaches the yeast at the right
sort of time. Okay.
And all you're doing is making the dough.
Mm.
And then you've just got to tip it out and it sticks to everything.
Oh, okay. Tip it
and carry
out
on as you've done it.
Oh,
here.
I see. So you've still got to shape it and, you know, do all that
of
thing.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. It only makes
so a little bit of work.
Yeah, but I often wonder, you see these people, these cookery programs, they keep on banging on about making your own bread. Now, if you don't like kneading dough, why don't they say, get yourself a bread maker. Mm. You're not making bread in it necessarily.
Mm.
You can make the dough for all these things.
Right.
It takes the effort out.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, well, I have got a bread maker, but as I say, and I have made bread in it, but I've tucked it away in the pantry, but I might have to just bring it out again and try some focaccia bread and see what happens.
Well, my wife always, she makes a pizza perhaps once a week.
So oh, okay.
Always uses the bread maker to make the dough.
Oh, right.
45 minutes.
Yeah, just go away and leave it.
And then roll
it out.
It goes
ding, ding, ding.
It makes a piece of pizza base.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, there you are, listeners. Just a few little hints there about our focaccia bread and anything else that's made in a bread maker. But what I'm going to do now too, Peter, is because we've got so many plums, you know, people have got probably plums lying around, or if you have got surplus plums, you know, offer them to somebody else. I'm sure, you know, some charity shops will take them and let people come and help themselves. But for this recipe, it's a plum sauce, and I do like plum sauce. Now, this one here, very easy, 3 kilos of plums, 1.5 kilos of sugar, 1.5 litres of vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, 1/2 onion chopped, 1 dessert spoon of ground ginger, 1 dessert spoon of salt. Now, you're placing all the ingredients in a pan, I presume a reasonably large one, and boil until the stones separate from the plum flesh. So I would say that would have to be at least, because I've been stewing a lot of plums, not with all this ingredient, but I have been stewing a lot of plums. And I usually give them about 20 minutes, you know, and then they really soften. And I don't know whether the plums separate, but they're easy to get out. But then all you're doing is strain through a colander and bottle. And that's easy.
Oh, so it takes all the skin out and everything.
That's right. If you're straining it, it will put it through. But basically, I think if you're straining it, you're not really doing it in a muslin. I think you just strain it and then squash the plums through.
You do it in a sieve, wouldn't you?
Yeah, in a sieve. Mm. Exactly. Yeah, because your plums, you'll still have to sort of squash those through, but it will leave behind the stones and, of course, the skins, as you said.
Yeah.
But please, please make sure that if you're doing it in a jar or a bottle, just heat up those you know, those containers before glass, of course, in the oven or have them sitting in hot water for a while. Don't ever, ever put anything that's too hot straight into a cold glass container. And very easy. And this, you know, a little wee note here that this recipe was a little bit sort of altered, I suppose you could say. It's come from the Aunt Daisy's Ultimate Cookery Book by Daisy Basham. And basically, this sauce is a good keeper and has been kept in some cases a couple of years and still tastes like you've just made it the day before.
That's a great name, Daisy Basham.
Yes, great name. Yeah, have you heard of it?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh,
no.
Right.
So what are you going to do with this plum sauce then?
Well, you're going to use it on, I've actually like it with cold chicken sandwiches.
Oh.
Yeah, plum sauce. Put it over.
Does it go jelly-like then?
It goes sauce-like.
Oh, well, I said
thick, like your thickens. Okay. Yeah. It's got no, I know that it's got no flour or anything actually doing it, but if you boil it, it will sort of like reduce, I suppose is the word, once those plums are cooked and they're really, really soft. Really soft, so you can simmer them along. I don't know, 3 kilos probably take a while. When I cook my plums, it's probably not quite that many, but just use it. And once you know, you can use a spoon or a fork, and you'll find that those plums are really soft. Yeah,
okay,
make sure they are soft.
All right,
and put it through a strainer, and yeah. Nice, and just a lovely little bit of flavour there. I don't know how much it makes, but I'll probably, I don't know, a few bottles with 3 kilos of plums. Yeah. You must get a few bottles out of it. But nice and easy. That's throwing everything in together.
Bob's your uncle and Daisy Basham's your aunt.
On that note, I'm going to say thank you, Peter.
Right. On that note, I think you're right to go. Gail, thank you very much again. And,
it's been fun.
See you next week with results of the little trial that you're going to do.
Yes, I better make myself a note.
Right. Bye for now.
Bye.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.